Welcome to The Mental Breakdown, where we tackle all issues related to mental health, mental illness, parenting, schooling, relationships, and everything in between. While Drs. Bernie and Richard will provide the most up-to-date ideas and perspectives, the information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for medical care. Our goal here at The Mental Breakdown is to provide you with information to help you make your life the best it can be. So without further ado, here's Dr. Bernie and Dr. Richard. Welcome to episode 24.1 of The Mental Breakdown, our very first supplemental. If you had the opportunity to listen to episode 24 already, you know that we ended that episode with me rushing out to go to court. They let me go.
For somebody else. That's right.
That's right.
He got off again.
It was for somebody else. I had the opportunity to testify about post-traumatic stress disorder, and I really like it when I have the opportunity to testify about those kinds of things, just to help bring a little bit more awareness about various mental health considerations and issues. So it was a good opportunity. But because I was able to finish that pretty quickly, I made it back in time for us to spend just a few minutes talking and finishing up our topic from this morning.
Again, speaking of court.
Speaking of court.
There was an announcement made this morning that there are judicial systems around the country that are acknowledging that individuals between the ages of 18 and 25 maybe shouldn't be treated as adults, because from a brain standpoint, they are more like children than they are like adults.
Right.
And that perhaps we ought to change and treat them less as adults and more like kids.
That's interesting.
That would be an interesting, again, an acknowledgement of brain development in the legal system.
Yeah.
It would be a step forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, we're off topic, but I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to testify about that a number of times in situations where you have, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-olds who have committed crimes of various magnitudes and trying to figure out how they should be managed in the courtroom, in the court system, because their brain isn't fully functioning yet. It's not fully developed. And
right. So I thought that was good news, because at least it acknowledges the role of brain development in the commission of crimes.
Yes.
So I thought that was a step in the right direction.
I think so. But for this supplemental podcast, what we're going to do is finish up our discussion about how do we teach how to learn. And we promise to come back and finish up by talking about what parents can do to help with this problem.
That's right.
Not that we really need it, because hopefully you've had the opportunity to listen to episode 24 already. But the issue is that the school system right now is working in a very narrowed focus. Mm-hmm. Everything is prescribed, so we have issues with prescribed learning and compliance.
Right.
And the system is set up to function in that manner.
That's right. It's focused on content. We want to teach a specific content, and then we want to test that content.
Right.
And then we judge the success of students, teachers, and schools based on how well they do on mastering that very narrow content.
Right. Okay. And as we've heard from kids many, many, many times, if it's not part of that content,
right,
it doesn't matter.
They're not going to do it.
They're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really care
about
it.
And teachers are saying the same thing. If
right.
it's not on the test, they're not going to teach it.
Right.
Okay. So it is, as you say, it's a very narrow concept of education.
Right. Yeah. And I think something that we should throw in here very quickly is that we're not blaming teachers for this.
Right.
You know, it's the way that the system is designed that sort of forces their hand.
It leaves teachers with no choice.
They don't have an option.
That's right. If you're going to be evaluated on test results, then you have to prepare students for the tests.
Right.
I mean, you're left without a choice.
Yeah.
So, no, this is not the teacher's fault.
Right. So, you know, obviously, educational reform, reform from the top is necessary, because, you know, from the bottom, teachers
even principals, their hands are tied. There's not a lot that they can do.
That's right.
They can encourage, and I think in previous podcasts we've talked about some principals that we've met with who have a different philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, those are principals who are in charge of charter schools and schools that do not necessarily engage by the same complete set of rules that regular public schools have.
Right.
So.
But what we've lost in this process of testing and testing and testing is we've narrowed the curriculum to a very prescribed content, and we have forgotten in the process that we should also be teaching children, number one, how to learn,
mm-hmm.
so that they can be lifelong learners, and we've also lost somewhere in the process a love of learning,
right.
that we want to learn.
Right.
And so we're also taking that out of the curriculum.
Right.
So we do have this very narrow curriculum, and everybody's worshiping on the altar of test results, but yet we're giving up a love of learning and how do you become a lifelong learner.
Right. Yeah, I think it's funny because I've mentioned before that I coach my son's soccer team. Well, the guy who coaches with me, my other coach, co-coach is what we call ourselves, he's a physician.
Right.
And, we talk about and we share with our players, we've got to study, I've got articles to read and journals to study and things like that to stay on top of things because that's what we have to do in our profession. And the kids look at you like, what? You have to study?
Strange concept, right.
And we try to explain, there's always something to learn. And,
right.
and I think that we are sort of pushing that away from students now.
Mm-hmm.
With the way that we're approaching education.
Right. That's the concern. And that's why we're doing these several podcasts here, is that the focus on content, the focus on test scores, this very, very narrow focus on measurable results, I don't like it. I'm not even going to apologize for it anymore. I'm just going to say I don't like it. And I don't like it because we're not teaching kids how to learn, and we're not teaching it. We're not giving them a love of learning,
right.
something that they should do and want to do for the rest of their lives. Now it's all about let's get the grades, let's get the degree, and we hear politicians say the same thing. Don't study these liberal arts subjects. Just go take courses that will lead to employment.
STEM,
right?
Yeah.
STEM, for example. And there's more to education than how it's being narrowly defined today.
Right. And there's so much more to it, and we'll be getting to it. But a few weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago, we talked about intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. Ideally, learning would be an intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
We would want to learn. But what's happened because of the focus on prescribed learning and compliance,
right.
it's become an extrinsic motivator because you have to do it to get this grade or to get this reward or to get this outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not internally driven anymore.
Right. We have institutionalized extrinsic motivation.
Right.
Right. Through test results.
Yeah, absolutely. So with all of that said, what do parents do? Well, we have narrowed it down to maybe three things that parents should do.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is recognizing and not folding, but appreciating that this is the system that we're in right now.
Right.
Students are in this situation. And so we do have to monitor their performance.
Mm-hmm.
Are they getting their homework done? Are they meeting the expectations of the school? You're going to hate that I'm saying this. Do their papers meet the expectations of the rubric?
That's right.
We have to do those things because that's the system in which they're learning.
That's right. That's right.
And so if we don't do that, then obviously the kids are at risk of not doing well. They're at risk of getting poor grades. And again, we know that if we earn poor grades over a period of time,
mm-hmm.
motivation decreases even more, and long-term outcomes are more poor.
It remains the parents' obligation to help their children function in whatever school system they happen to be in.
Right.
If we were in a European school system, it would be our obligation to help our children function in that system.
Right.
But we happen to be in this system at this time, and so the parental obligation is you have to do everything you can to assist your children in the system where we are.
right,
where we find ourselves.
Right. So it's so that's the first step. We have to do that. Now, a few comments about how we need to do that.
Right.
We can't be helicopter parents.
Right. Right.
You have to give some breathing room. So I always encourage parents to resist the urge of daily monitoring of what it says online, what right. the online, whether it's Pinnacle or Canvas or whatever mm-hmm. system your school uses to present information online, resist the urge of looking at that every day.
Right.
Because if you do, you're going to drive yourself crazy and you're going to really make the child crazy because the constant microscope.
Right.
So you have to balance that. Part of balancing that is knowing your kid.
Right.
You know, we have kids that need frequent monitoring and we have those who don't.
That's right. You have to start with the children, with the child you have. Some children need daily monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
Other children don't.
Right.
And you have to know your child and know how much monitoring your child needs. If your child is doing her homework, she's keeping up with the assignments and doing okay, leave her alone. Because what is the goal? After all, the goal is that children will regulate their own learning, that they'll learn how to do this themselves.
Right.
That's what we want, no matter what child we're raising. We want them to learn how to do it on their own. Well, if your child is already doing it on her own, you've already accomplished that task.
Right.
If they need daily help, then you provide daily help. But
right.
it's tailored to each child, each child's temperament and each child's ability to self-regulate and self-monitor.
Right. And I think that it's prudent to consider the consequences of monitoring daily and what that would lead to. You know, this often happens, and I think I say often happens a lot, but, you know, we hear it frequently where parents will go online and the student will have a zero right. for some assignment.
Right. That's right.
And the parent will go to the student and say, well, why do you have a zero for that? And they say, oh, well, I turned it in. The teacher just didn't put it in yet.
Right.
Now the parent is in a sticky situation. Mm-hmm. Do you punish the child for having a zero?
Right.
Do you believe them and mm-hmm. wait?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you contact the teacher to right. see if what they're saying is accurate?
Right.
You know, you're now in a very precarious situation.
That's right.
So monitoring maybe less frequently
mm-hmm.
for many students, at least with the online monitoring, mm-hmm. I think is a safe bet.
I think if you monitor weekly, like let's say you decide that you're going to monitor on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have 4 days of work, and if work needs to be done, you still have a day to contact the teacher Friday,
right?
And you have 2 days to make up any work that might not be done. You have Saturday and Sunday,
right?
And that should be sufficient for most kids.
Right.
Is a weekly monitoring?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think daily you're going to invite trouble that you don't want to get into.
Right. And I think that if your child is one that needs daily monitoring, what we're talking about with that is backpack monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking
mm-hmm.
in their backpack, what homework do you have?
Right.
If you open the backpack and there's blank pages or there's worksheets that haven't mm-hmm. been completed, those kinds of questions, you know,
old
having
homework
them do those kind of...
wasn't turned in.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And so you're monitoring the backpack, you're not necessarily okay. monitoring mm-hmm. the online
right.
that requires much more flexibility in your interpretation.
Right.
Right. When you're in the backpack, you can see, you know, there's a worksheet right there. There's a math worksheet that's not
mm-hmm.
finished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we need to do that for homework tonight.
Right.
And monitor, if you're going to monitor daily, do it that way. The other thing, the other last part with the balance is you got to keep in mind how much work the kids are doing. It's the amount of homework kids are getting is continuing to increase.
Right.
You know, students are doing hours worth of homework every night.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind. You know, most of us, many of us, don't go to work for 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, then come home and do two or three or four more hours worth of work. But yet we're expecting our kids to do that.
Right.
Let's be a little bit more realistic. And, you know, certainly that means you have to have very good communication with the school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your kid is coming home, and I hope this doesn't upset teachers. I said something before that upset teachers, but I hope that this one doesn't. If your student comes home and it's taking them 2 or 3 or 4 hours to get homework done,
mm-hmm.
you got to stop at some point and write a note to the teacher and say, hey, we worked on this, like really worked on this for 3 hours and we didn't get it done. Mm-hmm. He really worked hard on it, but we just couldn't get it all done. Can he have another day? Can he only be graded on what he did? You know, what are our other options? Because, you know, teachers, you know, they see what happens at school, and not that their expectations are unrealistic, but there probably are students in the classroom that can get it done in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. But they're just as likely as there's that student, there's other students who will take hours to get it done. Mm-hmm. And I think that communication between home and school is critical in those circumstances, so that the teacher knows the parent is on top of it. They're making sure that the student's getting their stuff done, but they're just not able to get it done in a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that any student younger than a high school, you know, any student elementary or middle school who's doing 3 or 4 or 5 hours of homework a night, I would always ask, because something's definitely wrong. Because most schools are not going to assign students that age 4 or 5 hours of homework. So if it's taking that long, I suspect that something else is wrong, and it's probably worth talking to the teacher about it. And I would, in most cases, you're going to get a reasonable explanation.
I think so.
Of what the problem might be.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So find a way to balance that. Again, you know, that first thing about what parents have to do, you have to accept that this is where we are. You have to monitor their performance, but keep it in balance.
Right.
The second thing that parents can do is, we have to provide our kids with experiences. Mm-hmm. We have to allow them to experiment. And so we need sometimes to create opportunities for them to experiment. And what comes with that? Failures. Sometimes they have to fail in a safe way. Right. We're not talking about failing in school. We're not talking about failing in math. Mm-hmm. But they have to have experiences sometimes where they get hurt, or where they fail, or where they just don't quite meet the expectations, and then they have to learn from that and fix it for the next time.
And I want to say that again. It doesn't do any child any good to have success after success after success after success,
right,
whether it's in school or in sports or anything else.
Right.
If your child is succeeding day after day after day after day after day, that means the work is either too easy or they're getting too much help. But at the very least, you're denying them the valuable experience of failing and having to try over again, or having to try harder.
Right.
And that's a necessary experience.
Right. We're going to do we have a podcast planned within the next few weeks where we're going to talk about resiliency. Mm-hmm. Resiliency is an attribute that we want our kids to have. Mm-hmm. But resiliency requires failure.
That's right.
To become resilient, you have to fail.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you got to provide those experiences. You got to give them the opportunity to generate. Now, what does that mean? What would that mean for your home? Mm-hmm. Well, it may mean, like something that we do at our home is, my kids are nerds, and mm-hmm. I say that lovingly. And so we have a microscope at the house. We mm-hmm. have a dissection kit at the house. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we will spend a few dollars and we will order things for them to dissect at home, mm-hmm. or we will order slides for them, or we'll find things outside for them to look at under the microscope. And it's done so that they can just explore this. I don't sit there with them and look at it, but I give it to them. They can look through it. They can learn from it. And if there's something that they don't understand, then I say, you know, jump on Google, see mm-hmm. what you can find out, learn, try to figure out what's going on with it, try to figure out how to solve this problem, mm-hmm. and let them do it.
Right.
We get caught up with the perception that they need to always be monitored, that they always need to be supervised and all this stuff. Let them be.
Or that they need to be taught by us.
Right.
No, they also need to teach themselves.
Right. Let them be.
But I like the idea of putting them in those situations, because even if you decide as a parent that you want your child to get an A on every assignment, that's fine. But then it becomes your obligation to create other circumstances that will allow the child the opportunity to fall short or to fail or to struggle.
Right. Okay?
You don't want her to struggle in school, fine, but come up with something else, that either a hobby, a sport, microscopes, anything else that they can do.
Fire.
building a fire
right.
in the backyard without yeah. burning the neighborhood down. You know, anything they can do where they have to do it on their own,
yeah.
that becomes your parental obligation.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that helps counter a lot of the, I'm going to use the word damage, that is done in yeah. their learning progression right. by the way that the system, the educational system is set up right now.
By the way the school systems are functioning, you know, we have to provide those other experiences.
Right, mm-hmm. right. I love it. And I think, Richard, I told you this story. I went into my son's room the other night, and he was asleep, and mm-hmm. he had fallen asleep watching
right.
YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I was like,
we can only imagine.
Here
what
he
was
is watching
YouTube
Minecraft
videos.
Or something
right.
again. I don't understand the joy of watching other people play games, but that's
generational.
Maybe I'm getting old.
Generational.
But as I'm walking up to the iPad and I'm looking at it, I hear the person on the YouTube station talking about epithelial cells.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was he was watching a movie, a video about different types of cells because he's really interested mm-hmm. in anatomy and physiology.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those moments where you sit back and you go, huh,
oh, good.
Something that's nice
right.
because that's what you hope for. And you know, when we open our kids the doors to some of those opportunities, to some of that awareness that, man, you know what, this is really interesting to learn about. I know it's not in your textbook at school, and I know it's
right.
not going to be on a test on Friday,
yeah.
but this is really
right.
cool stuff.
It's not going to be on the end of course exam,
right.
but it's still really cool.
Yeah, let's learn this stuff. Let's
right.
let's see what we can do, and we got to foster that,
mm-hmm.
like you said, love of learning in our kids. So the third thing, so there's monitoring their performance, providing these experiences for them. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is we must find ways to reduce our kids' anxieties about
right.
all this.
Right.
Kids are so stressed out. I mean, the prevalence of anxiety disorders, the prevalence of medical disorders associated with stress that mm-hmm. is now prevalent in children,
right.
all of this continues to increase.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do something about managing this anxiety and the stress that our kids are experiencing
right.
as a result of all this.
Yeah, when No Child Left Behind was signed into law in 2001, there were many features of that that had nonpartisan support in the Congress. And there were many features of that most of us were hoping would come to fruition. Many of those things didn't, and No Child Left Behind is either going to be rewritten or discarded altogether. But one of the things that it did is it made learning very serious, and it punished poor performance.
Right.
And so that's what created all this anxiety, because once you tied a teacher's success to test scores,
right.
you raise anxiety. Once you tied the principal's success to test scores and school success to test scores, and if you didn't produce at a certain level, if not enough kids perform at a high level, your school got less money. So that created anxiety for principals and teachers, which was then passed down to students.
Right.
And so one of the unintended, and I think it was an unintended consequence of No Child Left Behind, was to create anxiety over how you're doing in school.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. Now, there obviously are lots of ways to reduce anxiety. Having fun activities
right.
reduces anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Allowing breaks in work reduces anxiety. If you're
right.
sitting there with your kid and he's doing 2 hours worth of math homework,
mm-hmm.
you know, giving him a 5 minute break every 20 or 30 minutes
right.
is a great way to reduce mm-hmm. some of that stress and reduce
right.
and sort of reset their attentional capacities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, telling your kid, you know, I've got a test coming up and they're anxious about this test coming up,
right.
you know, reducing their anxiety by saying, you know what, buddy, I know you're going to do the best you can do.
Right.
That's all you can do.
Right.
No, there's no reason to stress about it while appreciating that they're going to be stressed about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, encouraging them to just, you know yep. what, you're going to do the best you can do and that's okay.
And to encourage, I mean, you can't get, as parents, we can't get caught up in how you're doing on the test and whether you're getting all A's. And education is important, but it's not more important than sleep.
Right.
Okay. Education is important, but it's not more important than your mental health.
Right.
And parents also have to be giving children those messages that, yes, education is important, but it's not as important as some other things that we also need to be attending to.
Right. Mm-hmm. Physical activity.
That's right.
Reduces anxiety.
That's right. And physical activity is as important as education.
Right.
As how you do in school. And so I think what parents have to do is they have to not only model this less anxious approach, this less frenetic. I mean, it's criminal what happens at test time in most schools, in most cities. I mean, parents and teachers are as weed up about this as the kids are, and they whip the kids into a frenzy.
Right.
Well, we want them to be motivated, but we don't want them to be frantic.
Right.
And kids are getting frantic,
right.
and they really are suffering. So I think the parents not only have to model that behavior, but they also have to teach their children that physical activity, sleep, eating, and not becoming so anxious are also as important.
Right. Mm-hmm. So those are things that the parent can do to reduce the anxiety that's bound to come as a result of the way the system is working.
Right.
And the pressures that the child is under. You know, I was talking with somebody the other day, and they said, we were talking about an 8-year-old kid who's really stressed out. I mean, the
already.
Poor kid is, yeah, he's...
Third grade, so he's already worried about...
He's a mess. And, you know, one of the parents said, you know, he's 8 years old. What does he have to be stressed about? Well, he's got a lot to be stressed about.
Every day he's hearing about this test that he's going to take later in the year.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And meanwhile, you know, the parents are saying, yeah, hey, you know, I don't understand. He made a C on his last test. I don't know what he did wrong. I don't know why he made a C.
He's only doing average work.
That's the pressure that's causing the anxiety.
Right.
So we have to reduce that. We have to keep those things in check. A C on a test is not the end of the world.
Right.
A B in a class is not the end of the world. A C in a class is not the end of the world.
Right.
You know, if there's any benefit to the way that our collegiate system, if we're looking at long-term things, the way that our collegiate system has evolved, you know what? If you are an average student and you still want to go to college, there are still avenues to go to college.
Right.
You know, you may not go to University of Florida, you may not go to Harvard, but you can go to community college, you can go to a state college,
right.
and you if you are determined, there are still lots and lots of avenues to take. So
right.
a poor grade in a class or poor performance on a test is not the end of the world.
Right.
And we don't want to sacrifice our kids' well-being for a test or for a grade.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be cautious of that.
Right.
And that begins with the parent.
That's right. Public policy in education, especially with educational reform, is pushing us. It's pushing the entire system into this prescribed and compliant way of doing things with this overemphasis on how you do on a single test. Parents have to be the antidote to that.
Right.
And they have to keep in mind that they have to bring their kids back from that edge all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they will be under that thumb 7.5 hours a day.
While they're in school.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For the other 7 or so waking hours of the day, they're under yours.
That's right.
And that is your opportunity to balance that stress out
right.
with these other things that you can be doing to help
right.
them.
That when they get home, it has to be a safe zone. It
right.
could be a productive zone, but it has to be a safe place for them to go.
Right.
With less anxiety and less of that frantic, I have to do it this way.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, all right. Anything else we wanted to mention?
No, but I sure would like to hear from anybody who's listening. Let us know what your experiences are. Because we sure would like to discuss this at length.
Yes. Obviously, this is something that we're pretty focused on. We think a lot about, and we can certainly talk about it. This supplemental has almost lasted 30 minutes now. So.
Has it really?
Yeah.
Short supplement.
So we could keep going
forever.
We
could obviously
forever.
Keep going. Right.
Because there's obviously so much more to be said about all of this, but we won't do that now. So, if you appreciate the podcast, we would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your thoughts. If you have the opportunity to jump on iTunes and write us a review, that would be great. click the number of stars. You can rate us that way. Obviously, that increases our visibility to other potential listeners. And the more listeners we have, the more discussions we can have, because the more ideas that are brought to the table, you know, you can never have too many ideas, is what I always say. So let's, you know, open that channel of discussion, you know, send us messages, write us on our Facebook page at The Mental Breakdown is on Facebook. Our practice is on Facebook at Psychological Associates of Central Florida. We're on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. I don't think I've mentioned that before.
Mentioned it a couple weeks ago.
We have a YouTube channel where you can find some of our some clips from some of our workshops. We have more and more to include. Love to hear what you think about those. And we'll be posting more of that. Is that everything? Workshop coming up next week, a week from today.
Next week on anxiety.
And so we're looking forward to that. We'll have some clips from that we'll be posting as well. So, all right. So write to us. Keep in touch with us. Keep listening. And let's keep pushing for a better way to do things. All right?
Agreed.
So until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a fantastic weekend and a good week next week.
Thank you for listening to The Mental Breakdown. If you want more information, you can check out our website at www.pacflorida.com. The Mental Breakdown is sponsored in part by theledger.com, where you can read our weekly column in the Live section. Our podcasts are available for download on iTunes, and you can follow us on our YouTube channel and Facebook. We would love to hear from you, so feel free to send us messages either through our website or on Facebook. You can send us questions or topics you would like for us to address on future podcasts. Drs. Bernie and Richard are available for workshops, so you can contact us for more information. Thank you for listening, and until next time, stay mentally healthy.